hey, everybody, and welcome to this latest episode of The Table. Here on The Table Podcast, we spend a few moments wrestling with interesting ideas and interesting thoughts and interesting things people are thinking about and doing. And I've got with me Brian Crenshaw and Brian McCurry, two guys I work with, and just wanted us to talk through kind of the idea of intentional neighboring. What does it mean to be a great neighbor? What does it mean to really pursue our neighbors? And so, guys, welcome.
Hey,
glad you're here.
Yeah, glad to be here.
You guys have done this well and then gone to battle with trying to be a good neighbor. Why don't you tell me a little bit about how that first got on your radar? I know, Brian McCurry, you mentioned to me earlier in the week or last week, a book you'd read or article you'd read that kind of got you thinking that way. And just kind of with Halloween coming up and just holidays throughout the year and practices that we can be thinking about to kind of help us be more intentional neighbors. Like, when did that idea even jump on your radar?
Yeah, I think Betsy and I and our family, we moved back to Memphis in 2012. And even at that time, I remember reading a book called The Art of Neighboring. And one of the, I think the big takeaway from that book for me was the fact that when Jesus was asked, what's the greatest commandment? He said, love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. And he said, love your neighbor as yourself. And again, the thrust of that book is oftentimes we'll make love your neighbor almost just like this metaphor for love all of humanity, which is true. But the author really pushes into, man, who are the neighbors that just practically live around you? Like who lives in the two houses or your apartment complex or wherever you live? Who are the actual people that live around you, and how are you praying for them, and how are you being personally invested in getting to know them for gospel purposes? Yeah. And so we set out, you know, from the start and move into a new neighborhood. It's like, man, we've got a great opportunity to be the new people, to try to meet as many people as we can, try to get to know as many people as we can. And so that really was for our family just a push to say, man, we want to be real intentional, real strategic, and look for opportunities to, again, with gospel intentionality, just get to know our neighbors over the years. And by God's grace, he's let us do some of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think for Aaron and I and a lot of our staff have similar stories, but we were real involved with a campus ministry back in college and just seeing how Jason Morris, a guy that discipled me, really just ingrained into my DNA, reaching your dorm floor and how to be incarnational wherever you're at. So whether that's a dorm floor, an office cubicle, a neighborhood, coaching a sports team or being in the stands of a sports team, that those areas are spaces that you can be incarnational. And so for us, when we had actually moved into an inner city neighborhood, when we moved to Memphis to help be part of fellowship, and was very shaped by the CCDA movement, Christian Community Development Association, and Dr. John Perkins, and read a lot of books that talk about that. And as we moved out to another neighborhood when the Germantown campus launched, we just continued to replicate what we had seen work in the inner city and in our college dorms there. And so we just sought to be a part of that community and look for different opportunities. And you know, one thing that popped up early in our neighborhood was a 4th of July cookout and parade. And we just wanted to be intentional and meet some people. And
so that was already happening or happening on a smaller scale than it is now?
Yeah, that was something that was already happening on a smaller scale than what we do now. And really, you know, and Brian McCurry talks a lot about this. You know, if you're in a different country or a different city as a missionary, you're going to look for what's already going on and try to leverage those things, join into those things. So for us, we just saw that the whole community would gather for this bike parade on the 4th of July. And then, you know, around 11 and the fire truck would come shoot off the fire hydrant and everybody would just go home. And we thought, well, no one's doing anything until later that night, so let's get a couple grills out and invite people over after that. And that's grown into something that's a lot larger, a lot more robust now. But it started pretty simply of all these people are here. What can we do to continue having conversations, give them a space to come? How can we meet some others? And so it was very low-hanging fruit. It just took a little creativity and intentionality.
So tell me what the Lord's kind of done with that and kind of how that's evolved over the years. And we'll talk about 4th of July right now and Halloween in a minute and the rest of the year as well. But yeah, let's just stay on this 4th of July parade. Y'all bettered it. And what specifically did you add to it? And what would it look like if I would have come this past July 4th?
Yeah. I mean, this, Crenshaw said it well. There were 20 of us standing around the mailbox the first time and said, man, there's nothing to do until 9 o'clock till we go watch fireworks. Let's grill some hot dogs next time. And so it steadily grew. How many years have we done this? It's been 4 or 5.
Well, I've been in that house six years. So yeah, this was year five, technically, because the first year was just, oh, we had the idea.
Yeah, that's right. We didn't do it the next year. So year two is when we did it. But it started with just hot dogs and a gas grill. And then the next year, we have another neighbor who cooks a lot of barbecue. We're like, man, what if we just kind of made it a potluck? We'll provide the barbecue and the hot dogs and everybody else kind of pitch in. And I would say that's been some of the secret sauce of it growing is everybody feels ownership. And it feels like it's everybody's event.
Yes, yeah, it's the neighborhood's
it's
party.
It's the neighborhood's party. Yeah. And so the neighborhood really is the one that does the bike parade or had the tradition of this kids bike parade on the 4th of July. And we've just kind of seized an opportunity and just made it even better. And year over year, that baby's grown. I mean, I help coordinate the food and all that kind of stuff and buy the barbecue, and Bob and Joanna Young and some of their friends cook the barbecue. But I bet you we served probably 400 plus people last year at this deal. And it just meets a need. That's the thing. Like whatever the size it is, I think more importantly, people just want to hang out and connect on that day. So it's like seizing an opportunity that's right in front of us for that.
Yeah, and a lot of this overlaps with a lot of things we've been teaching for a lot of years at Fellowship about the priesthood of all believers, about the ministry that happens Monday through Saturday. You know, we gather on Sunday. We sure hope ministry happens when we gather on Sunday, but the rest of the week is the church scattered. And we've always wanted all of us to think about ourselves as missionaries, our whole church, all the followers of Jesus, and to think strategically and intentionally about how I can be a blessing in my spheres of influence, and one of those is definitely in our neighborhood. So I've also heard some apologists talk about how the apologetics of the next 2-3 decades is going to be hospitality, that basically we have a loneliness epidemic in our country that's only getting worse. And if we can get out of the backyard and fences and pull grills to the front yard, it's just amazing how people will gather and respond, and what an opportunity we have to host parties and throw parties and use that as a means to get into people's lives and connect with them.
Yeah, and that is interesting you say that. That's literally what we did, was pull the grills out to the front. And you know, as Aaron and I moved into the neighborhood, the way our house is set up and the size is not the largest, and it's pretty segmented inside. We can't do a lot of hosting inside like we would want to do, but we've got a pretty large front yard, and just thought, well, let's utilize that. And you know, I think the thing is, we just starting with simplicity, that you know, the first year it was just pretty simple. It was a couple grills and some hot dogs and some drinks, and that led to maybe an hour of lingering. And over the years, it's become a barbecue rig with a smoker on it that's you know, included more people bringing things. But it really was just something where we took something that could have happened in the back amongst two families, not that that's necessarily bad, but to bring it to the front yard and invite a few others. And I think one thing, Brian, you can speak to this too, but I think people are looking for things like that to go to. I think sometimes in our church world and in Christian circles, we're used to gathering, we're used to meeting, we're used to doing things like that. But the average person, I think, probably don't operate like that. You know, some of them have more social lives, but I think there's a lot of people out there that are really looking for something to go to. They're not used to assembling weekly with others, and they're starved for relationship and community. And so to be intentional and to take advantage of that, really, I think we've seen people come out of the woodwork. If you give them something that's simplistic, fun to come to, they come to it.
that, you know, as a parent, you give me something I can walk to that my kids are going to have a great time at that doesn't really cost me much other than what I eat or pitch in. And there's a chance to be around other kids and to get to know some of my neighbors. That is just an absolute no-brainer. I don't even have to get in a car. That is awesome. Anything else? Well, with Halloween coming up, let's talk about some. I know y'all had some party brewing for it, and an opportunity to kind of capitalize on people being out for trick or treating, and literally our neighbors coming to our doors. So, what are y'all doing there? How are y'all thinking about that? What you got in the works for Halloween?
Yeah, this one kind of evolved too. So it's kind of funny. Like our two big parties we throw are 4th of July and Halloween. Just so you know, we wouldn't have picked that, but it was just kind of seeing those opportunities in front of us and. This was, I remember reading an article by Jeff Vanderstelt. It's probably been 6-7 years ago. And he was kind of talking about some of the same things, some of the same themes. Just the fact that Halloween night, for kids, it's just a free candy holiday, a dress up free candy holiday. Right. How can you make that more intentionally, again, gospel strategic for the people that are in your neighborhood? And when you think about it, whether you have kids or not, people are knocking on your door on Halloween and you're knocking on their door, and like it is just one of the best days of the year, maybe the best days of the year to actually meet your neighbors. Mm-hmm. And so kind of with that vision, we're like, man, what could we do to just create space again for people to hang out, for us to get to know our neighbors, for our neighbors to get to know one another. Mm-hmm. And so we've just kind of created space both in 4th of July party, but also the Halloween party that we do just for our neighbors to get to know one another, and then us to get to know them. Mm. And so in a night where your kids are running door to door and getting there as fast as we can, we just try to create this little party space or hangout space where those families can actually just slow down for just a second. And Crenshaw can talk about more some of the how and what we do, but like that's the why behind it, is just a strategic day of the year to meet your neighbors.
Yeah,
we, again, just started simply 1 year. It was just a couple fire pits that we put in the driveway and served some hot cider, and that's grown. I think what we've noticed over the past few years is that parents, when they're out trick-or-treating, need a pit stop place. And so we just realized we've got a projector that our student ministry uses. We've got this inflatable movie screen. And so we basically set up a lawn movie with Charlie Brown, The Great Pumpkin. It's about 15-20 minutes, and so it allows people to come through. It really gives their kids a place to sit and watch something and not have to really be as attentive to the kids for about 20 minutes.
And can I jump in on that?
Go ahead.
Here's something that's really cool and nostalgic about that is parents remember watching that as a kid. It comes on once a year, 30 minutes. It's not even that great of a movie. But it's very nostalgic. And so I remember, I guess it was last year, most recently when we did it, like you see these parents taking photos of their kids watching this movie that they loved when they were kids.
Yeah, that's awesome.
You know what I mean? And so it's not even, it's just a 30-minute Charlie Brown. Everybody knows the story, The Great Pumpkin, Charlie Brown. But like even something as simple as that and whatever, it creates space and people want to hang out. People want to sit and watch that movie, which is kind of funny.
Because trick-or-treating, you know, you can go around for an hour and somewhat feel exhausted from that. So we thought, you know, if we provide some type of refreshment, some safe, neat spot for their kids to just hang for 20, 30 minutes, it's almost like this halftime for trick-or-treaters. And so that's grown. We didn't even intend that necessarily at the beginning. We started hearing feedback that was important to people. And we noticed they would stick around, and some, the mom would stay back and talk with some of the ladies, and the dad would take some of the kids around, and they'd flip-flop. And so it's almost in some ways become the hub for that night. But yeah, like Brian mentioned, it's just something that we started simple, took advantage of something that was already going on. And then just the fact that we're willing to do it every year and put a little bit more time and energy into it every year, and it grows and grows. And, you know, it scales, and this is something too that, you know, we would be doing, we do together. We're part of a fellowship group, or our version of a community group. And so they've pitched in and helped with that. But even if we weren't together in that, we would do these as a family. It's gotten our kids out, and they see the vision of it. They're understanding that they're putting together s'more packets or helping set up lights, and they realize they're helping reach their neighbors. And so it's a real neat thing for family as well. But yeah, it's just something simple, and just being intentional about it and just seeing what comes of it.
And I'll say this too, like one of the other cool byproducts of both these events is a lot of folks from our church really are the horsepower that kind of started this. Mm-hmm. But like, we have lots of other friends and neighbors that are not a part of our church that we've just invested in relationships that actually help pull these things off now.
That's so awesome.
And so it's like this team effort. It's a neighborhood team effort that kind of the heart of it was started by some of our church friends and church families. But like, it's become, both of these have become community events that really the neighborhood has adopted as these two traditional kind of fun parties that happen during the year.
Yeah. Yeah, it reminds me of one of our kind of Fellowship Memphis legend stories. When we first started casting a vision for things like that, for people to see themselves as the chaplain of their street and to begin to ask that question you mentioned earlier, how can I be praying for my neighbors? And literally walking the neighborhood and asking our neighbors how we could pray for them is a really powerful thing to do that can lead to all kinds of really great conversations. And yeah, this idea of, you know, being the chief party thrower of your street. And I remember Randy early on, not a likely candidate to take me up on something like that after one of my early sermons, borrowed our projector, one of the few assets we had. And I think it was 4th of July or something coming up. Yeah. I think it was. Yeah. And put the Incredibles on a sheet outside, pulled the grill to the front yard, which is a common theme. Passed out flyers and had like 200 people show up, and they like spontaneously that night planned a parade the next day, and I think that thing's still going on. And so it's
and that's really what inspired this. It was Randy doing that and hearing those stories was, well, let's try to capture that.
Yeah, I just can't help but think if Christians would take that role seriously and see the potential of being a leader in their neighborhood. And we just studied Mark 9 yesterday and talked about leadership is taking initiative for the benefit of others, and that's what you're doing. That is a blessing to your neighbors and in and of itself, period. If nothing else comes out of that, that's a really good thing. But then I can't help but imagine that doesn't enhance relationships and opportunities for conversations and invitations to church and invitations into life and into your home the rest of the year. Is that true? Does that lead to other things?
Absolutely. It's fun to see now years down the road. I remember one of our early fellowship group gatherings at our house, we had put kind of three or four names on an index card that we were just intentionally going to pray for. Mm-hmm. Some of our neighbors, just real practically, who would be the people that God put on our heart or that he's letting us spend time with that we could share Christ with, love, serve, be generous towards. And like, some of those people that were on those cards are coming to our church now. We've been in their homes, they've been in our homes, we pray together. They've reached out to us in times of need. I see lots of those families have students involved in our youth group now, which is really cool. A lot of our relational circles were through our school. And so those are the people that we're praying for. And so God's just really blessed that and given us a lot of favor for just committing to that and praying for that, believing God to do some awesome things through the years and being invested in it for the long haul. That's the other thing. Is none of these events were an end in of themselves. Right. It really was just an opportunity to start to get to know these neighbors that God's really used years down the road.
Yeah, that's why I was going to just chime in that, these events, there may not even be measurable fruit that comes out of that one event. But one thing I've noticed is it allows people to know who you are, to build some trust, to build some bridges relationally to where when one of these neighbors is going through something, they see you as a place to bring into that that problem or that issue. And so there's ongoing fruit from a 4th of July event or Halloween event that, we've been contacted when certain families in the neighborhood, their students were going through something or maritally they were going through something. So some of those conversations were born out of maybe putting tables up together with someone and they just feel a little bit of trust there or sharing ideas on what potluck stuff to bring, and that's where that relationship starts, and then from there it can lead to some more in-depth conversations down the road. So like Brian said, the end zone's not necessarily that night, that event. I'm not neither of us are getting up and sharing anything gospel wise. We're not passing out, you know, any
invitation. It's not a bait and switch.
Right. Yeah. It's not. It's just, we're just trying to be loving people. And people know that we're pastors, or they ask us, you know, what do we do? And we find ways to try to tell our story. And those things end up getting known and passed around. So they know we're believers, and they know that, you know, we're pastors that love the community. But yeah, we're really just wanting to be hospitable with no strings attached, and just letting the Spirit do what He wants to do and the fruit that He wants to grow through that. And so the intentionality is key, but it's something that, you know, you never know where it's going to go. But it's not necessarily some calculated bait switch, some strategy. It's just love people well and serve them, and fruit comes out of that in a lot of ways that you can't plan or measure.
Yeah, I know Beth and I have done that in years past. Halloween, we've, again, pulled the grills to the front, and before it gets dark, we've done, like, hot dogs and invited friends and neighbors, and I found that to be a really neat combo. So when a lot of my friends that aren't necessarily in my neighborhood but are ministry-minded and great with people, invite them over because they're looking for a place to trick-or-treat and eat and hang out. And then my neighbors as well, that's a neat combo. We've done that with Christmas parties as well, just open our home and invited friends and neighbors. And then we've just started last year our street, like the tradition of a first Sunday night in December kind of brunch or dinner at our house, and just open it up and having our whole street come over. And it's fun. Pursue them. I know Wilson and Katie Moore do an outdoor living nativity scene. That's really cool. The kids do it, and it's fun to just see different fellowship folks catching that vision to do something to gather neighbors to really be a blessing in their neighborhood. And any closing thoughts or words you would have for those listening to this?
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, it's Brian Crenshaw mentioned this. It really, I think people have a need to belong. And all we're trying to do in this is just create space for that to happen. And that happens towards us, but it also happens towards one another. And so you're just creating community that people crave and may not be able, you know, apart from the church. Again, we have that benefit of that being a, you know, community being an aspect that we strive for all the time in our church world. But like, where are others who might be outside of the family of God? Where are they finding that? And so just trying to create that space for others to be that. I think that's the heart behind all that. And it's really not that hard. It really can be. I would just encourage folks to look at the opportunities that are already in front of them, where they're hanging out with people, and then just invite others to be a part of that with you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's not creating this brand new thing out of nothing necessarily. It's just looking at the opportunities that you already have with some intentionality, and then do it with your friends. Like, that makes it a lot more fun.
Yeah.
That's why I think this has had some staying power and has even grown, because of our church fellowship group that's done it together. Neighbors who may or may not even go to our church now help host these things and lead these things, give manpower. And so, that'd just be a couple of encouragements on kind of how to do it and what to look for. It can happen in your neighborhood or where you live and your spheres of influence on another day of the year. Just look for those opportunities you already might have.
Yeah. Yeah. I think closing thoughts, just like Brian said, you know, people want to belong. And I think, you know, he mentioned earlier, just inviting them to help plan and serve. And you know, so it's not just us as fellowship, the people that go there serving the community, it's really inviting them in to serve with us, I think, is one key piece, that they don't feel segmented from us as a church doing it, that they feel some ownership in it. And then lastly, just that, you know, all this is transferable. It's scalable. If you know, if my family picked up and moved to some other city across the world, we'd look for some festival, some group of people that we could serve that are already getting together and just be intentional in that way. And we've just seen that work over and over across the decades. It's just kind of, you know, vanilla ice cream and brownies. It's not too complicated, but it's always good. And so we really would try to do that wherever we're at and build that into our kids, for them to do that wherever they're at as they grow up.
Yeah, again, so I just think we have a massive opportunity few years back, I had a chance to go to my dad's 50th high school reunion. He grew up out at Pickwick, so we're out at Pickwick, and actually where the new lodge is was his old neighborhood. So we're walking through that parking lot, and he's kind of walking me through the road that went down his street, describing what it was like for him to grow up. He described every single person on their front porch every evening listening to Harry Carey call baseball, and how he would bounce from porch to porch to porch to porch. And I just thought, since that 1940s, 50s America to 2019 America, we've literally moved from front porches to backyards. And we don't invest in porches. We invest in backyards and outdoor living space in the backyard and fences, which is good and fine. But boy, there is an opportunity missed. If we don't open up our homes, open up our lives, get out on the front porch, get out on our streets, become the party throwers, those who initiate toward our neighbors. And like I said, every study will tell you our neighbors are in crisis when it comes to loneliness, and we're only getting more isolated and more self-absorbed. And so I think the church has a massive opportunity if we'll flex flex our hospitality muscles. All kinds of good, great things in ministry could happen. So thanks, guys. And hey, if you're listening to this and you're doing this, or you know some who are or got great ideas, please let us know. JB@fellowshipmemphis.org. We'd love to tell those stories, and we hope to see you soon. Hey, everybody. Pastor John Bryson here, and just want to tell you about another podcast in our family of podcasts. The Grind is a podcast that celebrates the doers and makers and the men and women of our great city of Memphis who get up every day to build and make and create something that's significant and special and helps our city. And so each episode of The Grind, we are celebrating sometimes an entrepreneur, sometimes a musician, sometimes someone who started a nonprofit or a for-profit, but it's the starters and the creators, and we love getting into their mind, heart, soul, hearing stories of persistence and just willing something into existence. And so hopefully The Grind will inspire us to create and us to persevere, and we'll learn great stories about great people and great organizations that are making our city so special. You can search for The Grind wherever you get your podcast.